on the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Most people don't know how many financial accounts they have or their net worth. And when you're not paying attention, you're leaving money on the table. The solution is Monarch, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, link all your accounts for a complete picture of your financial health. You'll never need a spreadsheet again. Get 50% off your first year. That's just $50 total at monarch.com with code budget. That's monarch.com, promo code budget.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast. In this episode, we dive into the unsettling case of Jennifer Farber Dulos, who vanished on May 24, 2019. Amidst a divorce and custody battle, her estranged husband, Fotis Dulos, and his partner, Michelle Trokinis, became the center of a shocking conspiracy. Today, we bring you up to the moment coverage from the courtroom as Trokinis faces trial, accused of a role in this presumed murder.
Morning.
Morning. Thank you.
Yeah. I think so. I would
imagine it attached to you. Yeah. There it is.
All right. Could I just have a moment, Your Honor, with my technical support person? I apologize, Your Honor. I was hoping I could get this technical thing done before we began. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Your Honor, for the opportunity to take care of a technical issue.
Thank you. Are we ready to proceed?
There are just a couple of brief matters, not for this witness, so we can either, but so there's not a, this, I'm not expecting to be very long with this, Ms. Madel or Madel. But the next witness, I understand, is a police officer who's going to describe certain patterns. My only splatter patterns. I just want to make sure that we understand how is that person going to be characterized? That whether or not his title is. He's a police colonel, but I just want to understand. I think he's a colonel, right?
Captain. Lieutenant colonel.
Lieutenant colonel. But I just want to make sure that we're not using some colloquial expression for what he's going to be testifying to. That's my only concern.
I can indicate to the court, Your Honor, Lieutenant Colonel Mark Davidson did a blood pattern analysis of the garage at 69 Wells, as well as the two vehicles. He wrote a report about his opinions on it, and that report is part of the case. He will be testifying to his opinion as to the blood pattern analysis that he reviewed of the garage.
That's fine.
That's it. I'm not looking for anything spectacular. He has the training experience, and he will talk about that as well and discuss his opinions in the reconstruction that he did on the blood spatter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, the term splatter is what I was concerned. That's not the title or the expertise. I have blood pattern.
I actually apologize. Splatter is actually not the right term. It's spatter. That's a technical term that I believe he will describe on what he sees on it, the blood pattern analysis. I keep getting corrected. There's no L. It is a blood pattern analysis, and some of that blood pattern analysis, it's my understanding, is an analysis, obviously a description of what his opinion is. And that's a term. There's numerous other terms that he will be testifying to that. That's it.
I'm satisfied with that representation.
Thank you. We can bring the jury in. Counsel stipulate to the presence of the jurors, please.
Yes, Judge. Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning.
Today we continue with the cross-examination of Ms. Madel. She can be brought in. Before we proceed, the court just received a note. The note is not signed. The court wants to discuss this with counsel. So we will ask that the jury be excused. Please be seated. Of course, there has been no election of a foreperson. So this note that the court received is not dated. It is not signed. It was handed to the court by the marshal moments ago. It reads, one of the jurors discussed something about the case, and it was all over social media. Said it was like Gone Girl. A brief mention, several other jurors said, don't discuss this. And have this marked as a court exhibit. Now, the court did not read the name of the juror, which is on that note. What the court is going to have to do first is find out who wrote the note.
Your Honor, I apologize, Ms. Maydell. Should Ms. Maydell be excused for this?
Yes. The court will then question the author of the note. And also inquire as to other matters concerning the note. The note does not indicate when these matters were discussed. That is, on what day they were discussed. And when other jurors responded. So the court is just going to have a brief conversation with the marshal to find out who handed the marshal the note.
Judge, may we just have a brief sidebar?
In a moment.
Yes, Judge.
The court simply asked the marshal to give me the name of the individual who gave her the note. Thank you. Do you wish to approach?
Yes, sir.
This morning. And then determine how this matter will be addressed. So we are going to stand in a recess.
All rise. This honorable Superior Court now stands in recess. Please exit the courtroom.
May.
you. And we are on the record, Madam Monitor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Court had an opportunity to discuss with counsel how we will proceed in addressing the note that came to the court's attention through the marshal today, authored by one of the jurors. The court is just going to read what is now Court Exhibit 2 into the record again. The note is unsigned. It is not dated. It reads, one of the jurors, and the juror's name is identified, discussed something about the case. And it was all over social media, said it was like Gone Girl. A brief mention. Several other jurors said, don't discuss this. What the court intends to do is first indicate that it will question the juror who authored the note. The court will allow counsel to ask questions through the court of the juror to explain what is not readily apparent from the note. The court will then ask the individual who was identified in the note to respond to some of the questions that the court will have concerning any communications that juror may have made to other jurors concerning the case. After that, the court will have to inquire of all of the jurors individually whether they have been in any way influenced by the comments of the juror who allegedly made the comments, whether they can continue to be fair and impartial, and whether the comments made by the individual have in any way affected their ability to continue to listen to the evidence with an open mind. The court will also ask the juror who authored the letter whether, because there are no four persons chosen yet because the case is not in deliberation, was that person chosen to bring this matter to the court's attention? While the court is questioning the juror who authored the note, Madam Monitor will continue to keep the record. However, there will be no audio or video allowed. And of course, while the court is questioning the jurors who may have overheard the conversation between the juror who authored the note and the juror who allegedly made the comments, whether they have been affected in such a way that they simply cannot continue. That has to be done individually for every juror. So as the court has explained what the process will be, the court will now close the courtroom. However, we will still be on the record. And close the courtroom. Ask everyone to leave, please.
All rise.
Thank you.
And we are back on the record, correct, Madam Monitor?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. The court will review the matter that came to the court's attention today and review the process by which that matter was addressed. Again, this morning, the marshal handed to the court a note from one of the jurors. The note read, one of the jurors, and that juror is identified in the note, discussed something about the case, and it was all over social media, said it was like Gone Girl. A brief mention. Several other jurors said, don't discuss this. Now that note is now a court exhibit number two. The court took the opportunity to discuss with counsel the process by which we will proceed in determining whether one or more jurors needed to be excused. The court thereafter closed the courtroom. However, there is a transcript generated of the proceeding that was conducted during the closed courtroom. That transcript with the names of the jurors redacted should be available because the court is ordering that transcript to be expedited, hopefully by Monday morning, again with the jurors' names redacted. The court questioned the juror who authored the note, and that juror verified the information in the note. The court then questioned the juror who was identified as the juror who made the comments. That juror indicated that the comments were made. The court indicated to that juror, juror number 186, that the reference made to Gone Girl and the fact that the case has received extensive social media attention may have influenced other jurors to possibly not afford the state or the defense, one or the other, a fair trial, an impartial trial. The court also indicated to that juror that the reference to Gone Girl, if any other juror was familiar with the film, may have influenced that juror to start to hear the evidence in terms of their familiarity with the film. The court then dismissed juror number 186 and thereafter proceeded to question each juror individually, specifically whether each one of those jurors had heard the comments. Some did, some did not. Whether, if they had heard the comments, they were able to still afford the state and the defense a fair and impartial trial. Without exception, every juror indicated that they would be able to afford the state and the defense a fair and impartial trial. Every juror indicated that they would not draw conclusions about the state's case or the defense's case prior to both the state and the defense resting and their charge to begin to deliberate. Those jurors also indicated they will still maintain their ability to avoid media coverage and social media coverage about the case. Again, every accused has the right to a speedy and public trial before an impartial jury in the state and district wherein that crime shall have been committed, the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution. In closing the court made every effort to make sure that even though the courtroom was closed, the transcript of the proceeding will be available to the public. We started this morning with the continuation of the cross-examination of Kristen Madel. What the court is going to do is ask that the jury be brought out, and that Ms. Madel may be brought in. Counsel stipulate to the presence of the jurors?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we continue with the cross-examination of Ms. Madel by the defense.
Good morning, Ms. Madel.
Good morning.
So there were a lot of different exhibits that you were shown, and you went through your there were multiple reports that you prepared. Is that right?
Yes.
And you actually were given different samples at different times and compared them to reports and deconvolutions that already had been done previously, right?
Yes.
And I think you said, correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't go back and start from scratch each time you were asked to compare another sample with your earlier work. Am I correct about that?
Well, it depends on the sample. I might have had to do a new decon if I DNR'd the first one to do a new comparison.
And the first reports you did were on June 1st, 2019. Is that right?
Around that date, yes.
You were asked at that point to examine certain materials and swabs and other things early on in this case while it was still in an early development state, correct?
Yes.
One of the things you were asked to do early on is to determine whether or not there was any DNA in certain parts of the Suburban, right?
Yes, I did have samples from the Suburban.
And as I understand it, one of the swabs that you were given to test was from the early on was of the WeatherTech floor liner in the rear cargo area of the Chevy Suburban. Is that right?
That sounds familiar, yes.
And you were also given other materials to test, correct?
Lots of materials, yes.
And so there's some of your reports actually move around from materials that you haven't even been asked about yet, right?
That is correct, yes.
So I'm just going to show you one portion from your first report, which you called your initial report is just called DNA report, right?
Yes.
And as I heard Mr. McGinnis the other day, if you were asked to look at another report, there were supplemental reports, right?
Yes, that's how they're labeled, so we can tell the difference.
And I think there were as many as, I think, 19 or 20 supplemental reports, right?
19, yes.
Okay, and with regard to the initial review of the WeatherTech floor liner from the back of the Suburban, you had labeled that as 42S1 in the lab?
If I could refer to it, yes, I don't recall exactly.
All right, well, I'm going to show you a page because, like you said, there were other things that you examined that weren't even relevant to either New Canaan or the vehicle, right?
Correct, yes.
So I'm just going to show you, if I may approach. I'm going to show you what has been done as J for identification. Just have you look at that for a moment.
Your Honor, may I see J? I haven't seen it.
I'll be happy to show the, before I ask a question, I will be happy to show the state. Recognize that?
Yes, I mean, it's taken out of a report because it has my signature on it, yes, but.
Right. So. And that is your signature on there?
Yes.
And it's, we understand there were other conclusions you reached about other items, but in that initial report, that was your conclusion with regard to that particular test of the WeatherTech cargo area, right?
Yes.
I would offer it, Your Honor.
Judge, I'm going to object, actually, because this is outside the scope of direct at this point, and frankly, I don't think that if we're referring to Jennifer Doulos' Suburban, I don't think that that's where this is from.
In other words, the exhibit doesn't reflect the sample taken from the Suburban. Is that the state's contention?
There's two Suburbans, Judge. We haven't gotten there yet in the case, and this is not from the Suburban that's referenced in the questions.
Can you look at your report to determine if 42S1 was from the Suburban in New Canaan? Do you have your reports in front of you?
I don't have my reports, and my reports would not give me any more information than that.
Would not give you any more information?
No, you'd need to go back to the submitting agency. RFA for the lab to say where that came from. I would just have the same description on that on my report.
All right.
So the objection is sustained.
Didn't you yesterday testify specifically as to 42S1 as being one of those samples that you tested?
I testified to so many yesterday. Honestly, I would have to recall the testimony if he asked me about that one.
All right. I just have a moment, Your Honor.
Yes.
I'm going to show you what has been marked as Exhibit 19 for identification and ask whether or not, if you look at the second page, whether that refreshes your recollection as to whether or not that was one of the items that was discussed with you yesterday.
Judge, I'm going to object. We did not discuss this item yesterday.
Well, the representation is that the state did not introduce that yesterday. So if the state did not introduce that evidence yesterday, the witness could not have seen that yesterday.
I believe that was one of the reports that was given to the witness to refresh her recollection.
Well, the state's representation is that apparently that testimony concerning that document was not elicited yesterday. Is that correct, Attorney McGill?
That's correct, Judge. And if I can have a moment with Attorney Schoenhorn, perhaps I can clear this up.
I'm going to move on, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So all of the exhibits that you examine, all of the laboratory work that you did with regard to what was taken from the home in New Canaan, all of the whatever findings you made, either there was an inconclusive result or it eliminated Michelle Traconis's DNA from being a contributor. Isn't that right?
Yes, I do not recall having a positive association.
Meaning it was, if there was no positive association, meaning it was a negative association, right?
Or inconclusive or insufficient.
No, when it came to the, right, either it was insufficient for you to make a conclusion, or it was inconclusive, or she was eliminated, correct?
Correct.
There was no positive association whatsoever from what was located in the house at 6 Wells Lane, correct?
Correct.
And when it came to all of your examination of the Suburban, the Chevy Suburban from New Canaan, all of those results were negative as to Michelle Traconis. Isn't that right?
Or insufficient or inconclusive.
Now, I just want to ask you a couple of questions to understand a little bit about transfer DNA. We got into that a little bit yesterday. We talked a little bit about primary and secondary transfer, correct?
We did, yes.
And you said you didn't like to use the word touch DNA because sometimes things are transferred without actually physically touching. Is that right?
Correct. The forensic community doesn't want to refer to every little bit of DNA that may be left on a surface as touch because we don't know. That would be implying that somebody actually did touch it to leave the DNA, which is not necessarily true.
So in fact, as we speak now, it's possible that some of our DNA is actually floating through the air just by virtue of our speaking. Isn't that right?
Yes, that is right.
And as I indicated that yesterday, you can test for as little as 3 cells. Isn't that right?
We can test for something that comes undetected on our quant. When we test how much we think of DNA we have, and we still can try an AMP. It doesn't mean we're going to get a profile, but we can try.
So in other words, like anything, if you were to swipe this microphone, even if nobody touched it, it is conceivable from your experience that there might be some DNA on that, right?
It's possible, yes.
And it might be detected when it's run through the lab, as opposed to you can't see anything on it, right?
Correct, yes. You can't see DNA.
And as I also asked you, I believe we got into it a very little bit yesterday, your DNA analysis did not distinguish between whether something came from a liquid such as DNA, so blood, or from skin cells. Isn't that right?
Yes, we cannot distinguish that.
So when we're talking about transfer DNA, would it be likely or at least possible that if one person handed a cake box to another person, that there might be transfer of DNA from the person who's giving the cake box to the person who's receiving?
Objection, no foundation for the hypothetical, Judge.
That's sustained.
If I were to ask you to assume that one person handed a cake box to another person with their hand, bare hands, and the other person accepted that box and then took it into their home, would it be possible that the first person who did the giving of that cake box would end, their DNA would end up in the hands of the second person?
I object. No foundation for the hypothetical.
Well, the question straddles a hypothetical and just a basic question about transfer DNA. As a hypothetical, it does not accurately reflect a scenario that it has been presented.
No, but it does.
Well, the court has not finished.
Yeah.
Because the court recalls no evidence about a cake box. So the court sees this not so much as a hypothetical, it fails as a hypothetical, but as a general question about how DNA is transferred. The court will overrule the objection.
Okay. So if someone touches a cake box, gives it to someone else, and then that cake box winds up inside a house, would the person's DNA be on that cake box?
Yes.
Yes, it would, possibly, if he left DNA behind.
All right. And would that also, if the person took the cake box in the location where the person, the giver, had been holding the box, is it possible that some of the DNA would also be transferred to the hands of the recipient?
That is possible.
And if that second person then opened a doorknob, would it be possible that some of the transferred DNA would end up on that doorknob?
I object, Your Honor.
Well, now this is starting to sound as if the door is being opened to a hypothetical, which has not been sufficiently articulated, so the objection is sustained.
Well, I will submit, Your Honor, that there will be this testimony. The fact that this witness is called before that testimony is elicited would not require, if I'm phrasing it in as a hypothetical, and I'm representing there will be this testimony will come at a later date regarding this.
Well, the hypothetical would have to begin this way. Assume certain facts.
All right.
And those facts already should have been introduced. From the assumption of the certain facts, you may add another fact, but those facts can't come down from the heavens as a hypothetical when none of the facts have been introduced. So sustain.
Would you also assume for purposes of my hypothetical that a person hands a piece of Easter Bunny chocolate, breaks it off, and hands it to the second person, and that person then puts it in their mouth? I'm not finished with my question. Would there be a possibility that DNA would be transferred to that second person's hands based on that scenario?
I object. Same objection.
Well, this is walking back the hypothetical, but any extension of the chocolate candy will then don the clothing of a hypothetical, and that will probably run into an objection, which the court would probably sustain. So the court will allow the chocolate candy example. The objection is overruled.
Sorry, can you repeat the scenario?
Yes. If a person was holding a chocolate, you know, these chocolate Easter bunnies, mm-hmm. right? And they break off a piece of that with their hand, mm-hmm. and they hand it to the second person. And that second person then puts that candy, the chocolate in their mouth. Is it possible that the DNA would transfer from the first person, the one who is holding the chocolate bunny, to the hands of the recipient of that chocolate candy?
It's possible.
All right. So whenever you transfer DNA from one person to another, the second person touches might also contain some of those skin cells of the first person, right?
It's possible. Yes.
And it would be enough so that it would be detectable through a swab and then placed through the STR mix program. Is that right?
Objection. Calls for speculation.
Well, the question is, would it be detectable? That's the question.
Yes.
Well, the court would assume that the answer is going to be articulated by the expert, either that yes, that's possible, or yes with an explanation, or no with an explanation. So the court will overrule the objection.
Do you remember the question?
Will it be detected?
Yeah.
It all depends on how much DNA was transferred from the first time to the second person, and how long the time frame was in between. I couldn't say that it would definitely be detected.
Oh, not necessarily definitely, but it's possible to be detected.
If there was enough DNA there, yes.
Right. And you said over what period of time? Is there a minimum or maximum period of time that DNA disappears from from a surface?
No, again, it's all the different situations, what kind of DNA it is, what kind of elements it's exposed to, how long, how hard it was pushed on that material, friction, the kind of surface it is, if it's porous. There's so many situations, I couldn't tell you how long.
Would weather affect that in terms of it being, if it's warmer as opposed to, like, now it's snowing out, would that affect it?
Oh, yeah, all weather, yes.
And so warm weather would be more likely to last longer, is that right?
No, warm weather would also increase moisture and degradation of bacteria.
And how long would it take for DNA to degrade in warm weather?
There's no time frame. Again, it's how much DNA is there, what kind of DNA is there, how hot the temperature is. I couldn't give you a time frame.
Have you been able to recover DNA for something that's been exposed to moist weather for 1 or 2 days?
I don't know that I've ever have a sample that I specifically did that, no.
All right. What about it indoors, inside a home? Would it last longer if it's not exposed to the elements?
It could.
I have no further questions. Well, if I could just hold on for 1 second. I just want to confer. So I just want to be clear that when you did your testing, some of you testified that some of the swabs were in fact were a contributor was the subject of the toothbrush swab, correct? In the comparison you did.
That I matched the toothbrush to some swabs?
Yes.
Yes, I did, yes.
All right, and so that we're not talking around it, if we were to assume that the toothbrush belonged to Jennifer Doulos, which is one of the things you did assume, right?
Yes.
Right, then you still can't tell whether the DNA that you you examined and deconvoluted using STR-MIX came from the mouth, from blood, or from skin cells, right?
The DNA that was on the toothbrush?
Well, we assume the DNA in the toothbrush must have come from inside the mouth, right?
Well, yes. Again, I don't understand the question. What DNA?
But we're assuming that came from somebody brushing their teeth, right?
Well, yes. But I can't say that it definitely came from her mouth.
Of course not. So I'm saying that the rest of the swabs that you compared it with, you don't know whether the source came from the mouth, the hand, that is touch, the skin cells, or from a bodily fluid, correct?
So you're talking about all the other evidence?
All the other examinations.
Correct. I can't tell you where that DNA came from.
All right. Thank you very much.
Is there a redirect?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Ms. Maydell, yesterday you were asked a series of questions about whether or not the swabbings which were submitted to the Division of Scientific Services were subsequently tested for confirmatory blood. Do you recall those questions?
I do, yes.
Are there certain protocols that the laboratory has with respect to whether or not they're going to be testing for confirmatory blood?
Yes, yeah, so there's a typical protocol where typically confirmatory testing for blood is done when it's a homicide case. These samples came in as a missing persons case, and a lot of them had the screening test for KM already done. So we don't repeat a test that's already been done by somebody that we do. So that's why we did not perform the KM testing again. And then also, we don't want to come.
I'm going to object because she had testified yesterday. This was outside her area that she just is aware that someone else does it. So for her to be the one to explain it, she's the wrong witness for that. She was limited to DNA.
Well, she's not talking about DNA. She's talking about lab process. And she's been at the lab for 20 years and is a supervisor. So the objection is overruled.
I think I left off that we also don't want to do extra screening testing or confirmatory testing if we have limited sample. So we really want to make sure that we're processing as much of that swab for the actual DNA test and not use some on a confirmatory or a screening test.
And so, as I understand your testimony, when a confirmatory test is done, more of the sample has to be used for that particular test. Is that correct?
Objection leading.
Well, because of the technical nature of the testimony, the court is going to allow some leeway on leading questions because, quite frankly, at times, counsel is making sure through the leading question that he or she understands the technology themselves. Overruled.
You may answer the question.
Yes, so if we were to go do another either KM or confirmatory test, we would have to take a cutting of that swab, which would then reduce the size sample that went to DNA.
Thank you. I have nothing additional.
Just very briefly, you already testified that you would not, some of the testing that was done was confirmed as blood, correct?
No.
Nothing?
We did screening testing for blood. We didn't do confirmatory.
All right.
And the stuff we talked about yesterday.
All right. So if we were, again, if some of the screening was done, someone confirmed that it, in fact, was blood for some of these swabs, right?
Not that I'm aware of. We just did screening.
All right. But you testified yesterday that you would never come into a courtroom and testify that a presumptive test was sufficiently scientifically reliable for you to swear that it was blood, right?
I object outside the scope.
Well, the testimony yesterday, the first question addressed whether or not there was confirmatory testing. The second question addressed what was testified to yesterday concerning this witness testifying that she would never come into a courtroom and say that a certain substance was blood just based on a screening. So that testimony went in yesterday. What would allow it?
Yes, I testified yesterday that I would never testify to a screening test being confirmatory for blood, and I'm not saying I'm doing that now.
You just use it as, you would agree that KM, which I think you just talked about, you call that a screening, it's a presumptive test, right?
We call it a screening test, yes.
All right, and that's so that you avoid the necessity of having to prove that something is blood or not blood, right?
No, we don't necessarily not want to prove that it's blood. We just want to see if something possibly can be blood, so then we pass it on for DNA testing.
So if you would agree with me that at least blood, if you were able to retrieve it, would have DNA, right?
Yes.
But an object, just because it tests positive presumptively for KM, would not necessarily mean that the DNA came from blood. That's my point.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. Thank you. I have no further questions.
I have nothing, Judge.
Thank you, Maydell. Thank you, Maydell.
Oh, and Judge, just for the record, we are going to be recalling Ms. Maydell later.
Thank you.
Your Honor, the state would call Mark Davidson. Or I'm sorry, Davison. May I have a moment with counsel, Your Honor?
Madam Clerk.
If you could please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or solemnly and sincerely affirm, as the case may be, that the evidence you shall give concerning this case shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, or upon penalty of perjury?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you please state your name and spell it for the record?
Mark Davison, M-A-R-K-D-A-V-I-S-O-N.
And your affiliation?
Connecticut State Police.
Thank you.
You may be seated.
Good afternoon. Your Honor, may I inquire?
Yes.
Thank you. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Fine, ma'am. Thank you.
Sir, are you currently working with the state police?
Yes, ma'am.
What is your current position, please?
I'm currently the commanding officer of the Office of Administrative Services. I'm a lieutenant colonel.
And how long have you worked for the Connecticut State Police?
Just about 18 years now.
And could you please briefly just describe some of your career path with the Connecticut State Police, please?
Yes. I started out on patrol in Troop G in Bridgeport. I worked on patrol for 3 years. I took a test for the Major Crime Squad. I spent 9 years with the Western District Major Crime Squad, primarily a little time as a street detective, 2 years as a crime scene detective. I was promoted to sergeant during that time period. I supervised the criminal investigative unit up at Troop L in Litchfield, and then I was the supervisor of the crime scene van for the next approximately 5 years. Subsequent to that, I was promoted to lieutenant. I ran a barracks up at Troop L for 2.5 years.
There's more to come at the Michelle Trokinas trial in the Jennifer Farber Dulos case. The mystery deepens and justice seeks its course. Press subscribe now and stay tuned for more episodes unraveling the truths behind the most perplexing criminal cases from true crime today.